everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John, engineering and producing our program. We're off and running on Tuesday, December the 5th, 2023. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Tucson campus. Five radio stations under one roof. This is 1030 KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, where you can listen to the program live. And if you don't hear the program live, you can certainly listen later for the podcasts. Got all of our podcasts, pretty much every show we've done since January of 2011. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now to Portland State University and Professor Emeritus in Geology, Andrew Fountain, who has really been doing some very interesting research. He's really at the top of his game in this area, and we're talking about the study of glaciers in the American West. And it is very surprising. I think our listeners are going to find Dr. Fountain, Professor Fountain, about what you have found out, that basically in the last, since the mid-20th century, back to the like 1950s to 1970s, that period, we've lost about one-fourth of our glaciers in the American West. Professor Fountain, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me. And it's good to be back in Tucson.
Yeah, I know you like Tucson very much. And so when I reached out to you, you said yes to the show, and I'm very pleased about that. I heard you on NPR. How did you come up with this this information about the glaciers?
Well, what we did was a while back, like about 5 years ago, we took a look at all the USGS topographic maps. Those are the ones that in the old days you could buy in the stores to go hiking and things like that. And on those maps, they had a lot of they included a lot of landscape, like forests and lakes and rivers, and also glaciers. So what we did was we digitized or outlined each of the glacier digitally on our computer in what we call the geographic information system that stores all that information. And then we spent much of COVID actually sitting in our office at home digitizing the same glaciers, but now on new imagery from mostly from airplanes, some from satellites, and looked at the change of glaciers from those maps to today. And those maps, by the way, were done in the 1950s through about the 1980s. So it's, you know, over a 50-year period of time that we looked at the glacier change.
What are we talking about in terms of, define for our listeners what you consider a glacier? We're not just talking about a small patch of snow on a mountainside.
Yeah, good question. Actually, that was an important question back in the late 1800s. They struggled to define what a glacier is. And the definition is it's perennial snow or ice. That means it's been around for a long time. That moves. So an avalanche, for example, moves, but that's seasonal snow, and that's not around a long time. So the way we figured out that it's been around a long time is, well, if it's been on the USGS maps and in our current photographs, well, yeah, it's been around a long time. And then we look at the surface of the glaciers in our aerial photos, and if there's cracks, look, that open up, and we call those crevasses, that means there's stress and strains and movement to form those crevasses. So therefore, it's moving, it's been around a long time, therefore it's a glacier.
How many glaciers are left in the American West?
We're looking at about 1,350 or so. That's down from about 1,400, so we've lost better than about 100 glaciers.
When will they all be disappearing? I hope not in the too distant future, but I'm afraid they will be, huh?
Yeah, it's not good news. it's going to be a while, but because glaciers can be resistant, and I'll talk about that in a second. With global warming, we are seeing the glaciers retreating pretty rapidly. Our modeling suggests on the Olympic Peninsula, which is just west of Seattle, those glaciers will be gone by 2070. Those are low-lying glaciers, you know, near the relatively warm Pacific Ocean. The glaciers at higher elevations will take longer. But I suspect, and this is just a guess, you know, we're looking at around 2100, 2120, or something like that. You know, it's within our children's lifetimes, probably, except for the highest glaciers, like on Mount Rainier in Washington, you know, which goes up 14,000 feet. So there'll be a few glaciers left on top. And I wanted to say something about glaciers being resistant. You know, we see this actually a lot in Colorado and other places. These glaciers shrink and in the mountains because the head wall of the mountain protects it from the direct sunlight. Also, they get extra snow through avalanching. So these small little glaciers, you know, the size of a couple of football fields, can really hang on for a while when all the other bigger glaciers have gone.
It's glaciers. People may be wondering, well, who cares? The glaciers are disappearing. Well, it's incredibly important, isn't it, Professor Fountain, for the runoff in this country, and especially, of course, in the West?
Yeah, you know, There's a variety of things to think about. One is that they're tangible indicators of climate change. So the smaller they become, clearly the warmer the climate is. I think we all understand that. The other thing is, like you say, water supply, particularly for the high alpine water resources, that is the ecology in the high alpine areas. The glaciers themselves don't really affect much population, with a few exceptions, because they're so small and they're so far, you know, so distant from populations. But the important issue with them is that they are indicators of our snowpack, because the snowpacks are natural reservoirs. You know, we depend on the snowpacks to keep the water in the mountains until late spring, early summer, when it runs off and supplies our reservoirs. Well, if the glaciers are getting smaller, the snowpacks are getting smaller as well, and that's no good.
I spent quite a bit of time up in Banff and Lake Louise and the Canadian Rockies. Your research really didn't go up into that area, but I would assume they're having the same deterioration and disappearance of glaciers in Western Canada.
Oh, yes, very much so. In fact, I collaborate with some people who have been working on that for the last decade, and we're basically seeing the same things. They have a lot more ice up there than we do down here, so they're much more concerned about it than maybe most Americans are.
You know, The glacier itself, at one point, maybe we should point out why we even have glaciers in this country and in the Western North America. Where did the glaciers come from, Professor Fountain?
Oh, that's a great question, and not enough people ask that. You know, everybody thinks, oh, it's got to be super cold. It's got to be Arctic conditions to have a glacier. Well, that's not true. All we need is more snow to fall in the winter than melts off in the summer. And when that happens, a glacier begins to grow. And in Washington, for example, like I mentioned, the Olympic Peninsula, winter temperatures there are only a couple of degrees below freezing, but they get so much snow in the winter, and then, of course, it warms in the summer, that those glaciers can grow. In fact, I remember I attended a science conference a long time ago when I was a student, and I remember this one guy talking about what would it take to have a glacier in Montreal, because they snowplow the streets and dump all the snow in the same place. And the snow would last until like August. So the idea is, gee, if they only added more snow, or if the air temperature would cool a little bit, maybe they could grow a glacier in the city of Montreal.
All right, Professor Andrew Fountain from Portland State University, who's doing some very innovative research studying glaciers. Professor, always a pleasure, and I hope to talk to you again, sir.
Well, thank you very much, and it's good to talk to everybody in Tucson.
Thank you very much. All right, let's talk a little bit about our favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery. They're open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 for breakfast, but right now we're focusing on the Danish Kringle. Mona's is home of the Danish Kringle, and when I hear Kringle, I think of Christmas and the holiday season, and Steve and the team, they're all ready to do the Danish Kringles for your Christmas Eve, for your Christmas Day, any kind of Christmas parties, the Kringle would be very appropriate. Check them out. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. All right, Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and we are neutral, let's put it that way, on the indices. We'll be right back with Shelley. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And here he is, Shelley Fishman. Shelley, how is your week going so far?
Okay, so far it's going fine and nothing really weird has happened in the markets, so I kind of scratch my head and say, well, I pretty much understand what's going on. But last week was a different story.
A lot of people, and I think we've talked about this, about the way post-pandemic, what you folks looking for some kind of a normal or maybe new normal when it comes to the economic scene. And it's pretty hard to figure out where people's heads are at when it comes to this.
You know, that's a really great point, Bill. What's happening is that people's normal is what they perceive it to be and mm-hmm. what they perceive it should be. You know, perception is reality and for individuals. So the Washington Post last week came up with an editorial. I normally don't bring editorials to this program because I'd rather just stick with facts and, mm-hmm. you know, let the editorial mm-hmm. comments be my own. But what has happened is that the economy is generally so good, and all of the indicators based upon, you know, macro indicators are absolutely, you know, spectacular in some ways. And yet a sizable portion of the American public views the economy as being in trouble, as likely going into recession, and that they are worse off today than they were a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. I scratch my head and say, well, wait a second. If perception is reality, we have to trust that perception. People know what they think, you know, their reality is, and they know how their own pocketbooks are being affected. Now, people can have short memories. They might forget that, you know, they had a couple of $1,500 or $1,600 stimulus packages coming to them, and that their raises over the past couple of years have now outpaced inflation. But what they see every day when they go into, you know, the supermarket is that chicken is a gazillion dollars an ounce. And that what was maybe $150 grocery bill is now $200. And they scratch their heads and go, wait a second, this inflation is really terrible. The statistics argue against that, but, you know, you can't argue with somebody's perception. What they see and feel is what's real for them.
And the polling, you are so right on this. I just heard this last night that the polling, Trump is polling in double digits ahead of Biden on the economy.
It makes absolutely no sense to me. The results during the Trump administration were about typical for a Republican president during the first term, which is to say they were, you know, pretty good, not fantastic, but pretty good. We had growth at around 2%. We had stock market growth that was pretty much average. Unemployment was good, not great, but good. And then COVID hit, mm-hmm. and you know that to the extent that there is any normal out there, COVID erased it completely. And so you can't really count those 3 years of COVID, the first year under Trump, the you know, next year under Biden, to have representative numbers in the macro economy. What we've seen now, as COVID has receded pretty much, you know, into just the reality that we live with, that the numbers are really rebounding in a way that nobody could have anticipated. You know, we've been through this. We've gone over this week after week after week. Last week we had another indicator as the inflation level that the Fed measures to achieve its 2% target came in at 2.5% the past quarter. Now, you know, that's pretty close to declaring victory. Mm-hmm. So the idea that the Fed might do something to raise interest rates again is not going to happen.
Yet the whole selling point that Republicans are now pointing to, saying it's the Biden economy.
Well, it is the Biden economy.
It's the
ain't
Biden
bad.
Economy that is hurting Americans. And you just gave that example a few moments ago about people look at the grocery bill and say that this is higher than it used to be, so somebody's got to be to blame.
Consumer spending is up at record levels.
Mm-hmm.
industrial spending is up at record levels. So where's the problem? Well, the problem is that those people who vote are scratching their heads and saying, but I perceive this to be different. You know, again, you can't convince somebody that they have to believe what you say rather than their lying eyes.
How do you change perceptions?
Well,
it's very hard.
You've got to be really, you know, very careful about how you present the numbers and make sure that people understand that their reality might not be what the numbers reflect, but the numbers are still what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have never, as economists, financial people, we have never really not used macro indicators to tell us how things are behaving. What's strange now, or not normal now, or new now, is that we have social media, we have news media that is essentially 24 hours a day. And so rather than, you know, waiting for the Sunday paper to come in and read the business section, everybody is bombarded with these facts on a daily basis and is beginning to see that there are dichotomies. There's a divergence between what the numbers are saying and what they're feeling. And then of course, for those people who are looking to make the economy seem to be bad for political reasons, they're getting reinforced by that. So to the extent that this is an economic problem, it's something we've talked about with income inequality and the fact that we have changed our tax policy to drive all of wealth up rather than into the middle class. That's a real problem. That's just not a perception problem. But, Bill, the other thing that we really have to deal with is that the way people feel about the economy translates into how they feel about politics and how they feel about leadership and how they feel about the government in general. And that's going to have consequences in the real world.
I just got an email from a listener saying my purchasing power is down and the tremendous spending has not helped one bit.
Well, the first part of that is probably right, because if that person says my spending power is down, then he or she is probably accurately reflecting his condition. The problem is he doesn't exist in the macro level, or she doesn't exist in the macro level. That person is not reflecting the averages, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so when for instance, investors take a look at the economy going forward and how companies are going to do and what companies are forecasting for profitability and earnings over the next quarters or for the following year or maybe a five-year plan, that is not intended to be for any one person. There is no average person. It is intended to be for, you know, how they feel the economy is going to be doing. When you take a look at that, just look at the stock market. I ran the numbers again to this morning because on Thursday, the markets were generally negative or flat, except the Dow was up 530 points. I mean, yeah, you know, you scratch your head and go, that's bizarre.
Mm-hmm.
The Dow, as of this morning, is up 8.8% year to date. That's very close to normal. The S&P is up 19.2% year to date, and the NASDAQ is up a whopping 36.6%. Somebody in the industrial, you know,
mm-hmm.
ecosphere,
yeah,
thinks things are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me, I'm having a coughing fit here.
That's all right.
But that is indicative of where companies believe the economy is going. We believe there's going to be a soft landing on inflation. And it just flies in the face of certain people's realities.
So when the Biden and his team, they say, you know, so what's the problem? Look at what we've already accomplished. They need to somehow articulate in very simple terms what they have accomplished.
Well,
the messaging.
Yeah, but I don't believe that's possible.
Okay.
What I believe is the way to fix this is with policy.
Mm-hmm.
When for the past 40 years, every penny of GDP growth has gone to the top 10% of the population, you got a problem, and it's a real problem. So you might think that, sure, half the population is doing just great, but the other half the population just doesn't feel that they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting along fine. We're importing stuff that's cheap, so everybody's got a big screen TV. But they don't feel anchored in the middle class. They don't feel that their kids are going to, you know, have a better economic life than they had. That's the problem that's got to be fixed, and you can't fix it in a campaign. You've got to fix it in real policy.
All right, Shelley Fishman, thank you very much. We'll see what happens here, but you did give us the numbers, and the way the indices look, it's turning out to be, on some of those markets, a very good
investors
year.
Are having a good year. Yeah, just
there
are.
You go. All right, Shelley Fishman, we will see you a week from today. Thanks, Shell.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, we'll take our break right here, the midway point of the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
I've known the Chavez family for 35 years, and thanks to Chavez since 67, you won't find any soft, saggy cushions at the Buckmaster Bungalow. Chavez since 67 can restuff your cushions with new, firm, high-density foam. What a difference that makes. They also offer full upholstery services. Give them a call at 520-795-8032 or check out the website ChavezSince67.com.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Green Things, your headquarters for all your poinsettias. They grew 21,000, and they've been going pretty darn fast because many organizations have been taking hundreds of them, in some cases over 1,000. 3384 East River Road, there are still poinsettias left. You believe it or not, Christmas is now less than 3 weeks away. GreenThingsAZ.com and their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com. Some beautiful items for the holidays from Mexico. For sure, those tin Christmas trees really are very neat. All right, 1 week from tonight, to celebrate its 40th anniversary, Primavera Foundation will host a presentation by Pulitzer Prize-winning author Matthew Desmond. Professor Desmond is at Princeton University, where he is a professor of sociology. He leads something called the Eviction Lab. His latest book is Poverty by America. It's a call to action to end financial and social inequality in the United States. His signature work is titled Poverty and Profit in the American City, and that has been the foundation of researching issues such as creating stable, affordable housing. Joining us on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Tisha Tallman joins us. She's the CEO of the Primavera Foundation. Tisha, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Thank you for having me, Bill.
It's our pleasure. Tell me a little bit about why Matthew Desmond's work would be relevant to where we live here in Tucson.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, Matthew Desmond actually has a direct connection to Arizona. Specifically, he grew up just outside of Flagstaff, so he does have a direct connection to Arizona and the Tucson area specifically. But also because his work is very relevant to, I think, the primacy issue that's on all of our minds in the United States, and that is poverty and homelessness. So the 40th anniversary kind of gave us an opportunity to think through what it was we wanted to lift up as and elevate as discourse on poverty and homelessness. And, of course, Matthew Desmond came to mind with his most recent book, Poverty by America.
Let's talk a little bit about the issues of poverty, homelessness, and affordable housing here in Tucson. How are we doing, Tisha?
We're not doing so well. One of the measures that we have to look at how we're doing in Tucson is looking at the data through what's called a point-in-time count that happens every year. And this last point-in-time count that happened in January of 2023, it showed that between 2018 and 2023, there was a 60% increase in homelessness in Tucson, Pima County, 200% increase in chronic homelessness. And I think one of the data points that is most alarming to us is that 300% of those counted on that particular day were unsheltered. So certainly we're not trending in the direction in which we would like to go, which is reducing poverty and ending homelessness.
What is Primavera doing to try to make a difference here in town?
Yeah, so we've existed for 40 years, been serving community, and we do everything from homeless prevention and intervention to housing individuals into emergency shelters. We have three of our own. We have a scattered site family shelter, we have a men's shelter, and a women's shelter. And then we also have 11 apartment complexes where we provide safe, affordable housing. And then we do everything all the way up to workforce development to secure economic stability for those who are housed or moving towards permanent housing. But the end goal of all of our programs is permanent sustainable housing for individuals, veterans, and families.
Did Primavera recently get a pretty large grant? I heard about that.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that, Bill. We were extremely honored to have received a $5 million one-time grant from the Bezos Day One Family Fund.
What will that be used for, Tisha?
Well, the Family Fund is to go towards alleviating poverty and homelessness for families. So in our proposal, we wrote a pretty strong case for an increased need here in Tucson. So part of our plans will be to sustain our current programming in our shelters that currently exist, but we want to move, and we intend to move with this money, away from the scattered site family shelter to an on-site family shelter, and we're going to be building that right around one of our existing properties.
Getting back to the event, and that's going to be at the Fox Tucson Theater with Matthew Desmond. That will be at 6 o'clock Tuesday, a week from tonight, December 12th. Is that a ticketed event, or is there free admission, or what's the deal there?
It is a ticketed event. The least expensive ticket is $25. I've also been appearing at a number of places, and I don't want the ticket price to be an impediment for anybody. We don't want anyone to have a barrier to gaining access to what Matthew Desmond has to say. So they can just contact us directly at primavera.org, and we'll be happy to provide tickets for them. They can also purchase tickets either through our primavera.org website or through the Fox Theater.
Tisha Tallman is with us, CEO at Primavera Foundation, celebrating their 40th year serving our community. Getting back to Desmond's latest book, which is titled Poverty by America, he argues that poverty persists because many of us who are well off benefit from it. He says we knowingly or unknowingly keep poor people poor by driving down their wages, forcing them to overpay for housing and credit. Does he have a point there, Tisha?
Well, I think, taking Matthew Desmond's work as a whole, I really think that he talks about a number of things, but I think he really emphasizes complicity. And he tries to distinguish, but to say that some of these nuances we make, whether someone's getting a tax exemption or is getting taxed doesn't have to be taxed at all, that these things are actually somewhat similar. If we're getting a subsidy from the federal government, it can take many forms. So kind of flipping things on its head, helping us rethink what a federal subsidy or welfare looks like and whether the majority of the subsidies are going to those who we think they are going to, those in poverty, struggling at the poverty line, or whether we also, middle class and wealthier folks are receiving subsidies from the federal government to our advantage, and what our part or what our role is in sustaining poverty. But mostly what I got out of Matthew Desmond's book is that he really tries to push people to think about being what he calls poverty abolitionists. And he also believes that we need to move the needle in a different direction, that over 50 years of looking at data on poverty and homelessness, that we really haven't moved the needle. Just slight ups and downs that really don't have to deal so much with administrations as it does with recession or the economy.
So this is really kind of the bottom line, the message you would like people to come away from the event a week from today.
Well, really, what in bringing Matthew Desmond to town, the thought was to elevate the discourse. We all have opinions and thoughts and data points in which we would like to emphasize and focus. But I think ultimately we all need to come to a place of collaboration and a participatory approach to looking at poverty and coming up with co-created pathways out of poverty, which is what we've been trying to do for 50 years.
All right, Tisha Tallman from the Primavera Foundation, where can people find out more about that event at the Fox a week from tonight at 6 o'clock?
Either the Fox Theater website or our website at primavera.org.
Thank you, Tisha.
Thank you so much.
All right. We'll take a break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Tuesday afternoon. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare.
Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane in North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of our program presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. SouthwestNewMexico.org. That's the place to go before you hop in the car, jump on the motorcycle, hop in the truck, or whatever to take that road trip 3 hours east of Tucson. Lots to do, hiking and just kind of hanging out in a great environment over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go on the live line now and bring in General Ted Maxwell, who leads up the Southern Arizona Leadership Council as president and CEO. He's been in that role since 2018. General Maxwell, how are you?
I'm doing good, Bill. How do you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear. And we brought this up yesterday after the Lukeville border crossing was closed. We had our monthly visit with our longtime border observer, Keith Rosenblum, and he was just kind of amazed that the Customs and Border Patrol would shut that entryway, which is so popular to Arizona's beach, which is, of course, Rocky Point, Puerto Penasco. And now we have Congressman Grijalva demanding answers from the Biden administration on this border closure. I know you're pretty concerned about it as well.
Well, I am, and it's sorry I'm not in the studio with you today, but I'm actually at a meeting of the Arizona Congressional caucuses to talk about this border issue, and it is a big deal. I mean, this is the time of the year. There's generally no more traffic in both directions because of the holidays, because of the shopping, because of the tourism, because of, you know, like you said, going to the beach. So to have these kind of issues coming up at our ports of entry is really problematic right now.
Well, and the alternatives are not good, General Maxwell, for people that want to go to Rocky Point or other places there in Mexico, right?
Well, there's absolutely, as any of us that live in the southern Arizona, Tucson, Pima County region know, the direct line from Tucson to the beach, closest way to get there is right through Lukeville and going down to Rocky Point. So it's going to add an hour or plus. But the bigger factor right now is these long waits and these extreme challenges at all of the ports of entry. Now, the discussion on today's thing is why. Why is it happening? And a lot of it, what a lot of folks may or may not be aware, is there's been a lot of movement by decisions out of the Department of Homeland Security to move what is the Customs Field Office, Field Operations, or the Blue Suiters, as some people refer to them, who man the ports of entry and ensure we have good flow of personnel and or people and goods across the borders. A lot of them have been reassigned from their assigned points of entry to assist the customs or the border patrol personnel with some of the migrant processing. And there's a shortage, honestly, within both Customs Border Patrol as well as the field operations, because we're still using a what I would call an antiquated or a not streamlined hiring process. And with a lot of the issues that are going on at our border are making it a real challenge to keep both the processing for the migrants coming across the border and the ports of entries open effectively. And as of right now, the move has been to move folks off the ports of entry into the assisting the Border Patrol.
Well, the big question now is, okay, you've closed it now. This is, I don't know, second day here. What are you hearing about a timeline for getting this resolved?
Well, the challenge is there's a couple ways this can be addressed. One of the things that we're pushing for is let's just move the folks assigned to the ports of entries back to the ports of entries and move the folks that are working in the border patrol sides, have them to continue the job. These are the jobs the folks signed up for, they trained for, they're working, they've been working, they're skilled at. And right now we're mixing and matching the two departments, and it's creating a big problem. And there's no quick solution. We're looking at six different options on how we can solve some of these issues, particularly at the ports of entry. But, I mean, it includes things like implementing a pilot program where we can hire locally. Right now, all job applications into the field offices as well as the Border Patrol have to go through a USAjobs.gov, which is a nationwide hiring process. It takes almost 18 months now to get folks from the initial contact to hiring, somewhere between 12 and 18 months, and that's just not an effective way of getting employees and personnel to man both the border, but also to, more importantly, for our economy and for our quality of life, to man the ports of entry.
Now, did I hear that Governor Hobbs was asked about this yesterday, and she said at this point there was no plan to bring in the Arizona National Guard? Could they take over and man the station?
The role of the guard can be activated by the state. It obviously comes with a cost. You activate all those personnel, and you've got to be able to fund them. And historically, the guard has done a lot in conjunction with Border Patrol. To put them on the points of entry, I think, would be more difficult, where the members of the guard aren't trained in that. It'd take time to spin them up, get them trained and they understand the policies, the procedures, and how the systems work at those ports of entry. You know, to me, the most important thing for the ports of entry will be getting the people, the members of the field operations force back where they belong, where they are trained and where they work. Now, the guard, in theory, could supplement some of the roles of the Border Patrol. We've done that in the past, but it does come at a cost, and this is a significant federal issue. The border is the responsibility of the federal government, and there's things they can do to help solve some of the problems, but they're not going to be overnight. That's the biggest challenge. You know, there's incentives that are being eliminated for people working in, under the Department of Homeland Security. We've talked about the skill set and the hiring process. There's just a lot of things that need to be done, but they're predominantly going to be at the federal level. And that's the importance of meeting with the congressional delegations. And honestly, for people to reach out, private citizens to reach out and contact their congressional offices and tell them that this is impacting your way of life, your quality of life. And they need to be more focused on solving those issues. We always talk about the migrant issue and the illegal border crossings, but people don't understand just the sheer magnitude of the operations at the ports of entry. And we're spending a lot of money even increasing those capabilities in Douglas and in San Luis, but we've got to have them staffed effectively or efficiently, or they're just great facilities that are unable to do the job they're designed for.
Well, this couldn't come at a worse time with Mexican shoppers notoriously want to come to Tucson to shop. And now if they're going to be waiting, the wait at the Nogales port of entry has been terrific, hasn't it?
It has. Actually, one of the folks that works at SCLC with me waited for over 2.5 hours the other night. On a Thursday night, so it wasn't even on a weekend traffic to get back across into the U.S. And the timing couldn't be worse, Bill. And people don't understand. It's not just the border communities. I mean, don't get me wrong. The border communities suffer more significantly with the loss of loss of travel across the border at this time, with shopping, with celebrations, with holiday parties and such. But the amount of money that is spent in Tucson and in our region, as well as in Phoenix at this time of the year, is just enormous. And it is really going to have a bigger impact than I think most people understand.
General Ted Maxwell with us on our live line from he is the president and CEO of the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, which is rightly concerned, as are a lot of people. So what's next? Have we heard anything from the Biden administration about this?
There's administration representatives on the call today, and right now it's really in being discussed, but there's no immediate action. The first action was to close the Lukeville point of entry and take those officers that are assigned to that base, move them over to that location to help with the border patrol. I think the conversations are there. I can tell you, it's from what I can tell, is the congressional delegation from Arizona, particularly the ones that are impacted or represent those border communities, are being vocal. And trying to get responses and trying to get it where, you know, this resolution that's being considered for signature by my organization, as well as several other economic development organizations, but more importantly, by all the members of the Arizona Border Counties Council, which is made up of all of the counties that sit on the borders or have that. So that includes Pima County, San Luis, Cochise, and out in the Yuma sector as well as all the chairmen of the ports of entry of the port authorities. And so will it help? I'm not sure. I understand Senator Kelly and Senator Sinema said a very directly worded approach to the administration.
Okay.
And it's not going to be a quick fix, but somebody's got to make a decision, and it's, unfortunately, I'm concerned it's going to impact us throughout the month of December.
All right. General, I hope it's resolved quickly. That's the bottom line. Thank you very much, Ted. Very much appreciate the time. Thank you.
Absolutely, Bill. Always appreciate you.
All right. On behalf of General Maxwell and John, engineering and producing the show, and me, Bill Buckmaster, thanks for listening today. Hope you have a great afternoon.